I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, Stevie Wiebe here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the DJ Redmatic episode. I learned about Redmatic in the 90s when I went into a music store and I bought a CD called Key Cool and Redmatic Cosmonauts. And so that's what I liked about the episode, talking about the history behind that, as well as the new Beat Junkies Music Academy DJ school that they have going on where people could go in and learn how to DJ. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Wiebe Show.
Kirby.
We have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome DJ Redmatic of the Beat Junkies.
Come on, guy.
Thanks for coming, man. It's an honor. I've been a big fan for years, man. Big fan. Oh, that's you. Oh, yeah, it's a handheld mic. So, yeah, man, thanks for coming.
Well,
I can't believe you're here, man.
I've been here.
I've been knowing about you since the 90s. Just going to the... Because there were a lot of Asian artists that I could look up to back then, and I somehow found out about your CD. I just bought just Key Cool and Redmatic.
Yes, sir.
And you mentioned, hey, can you grab Kirby? And you mentioned this is a special day because it's the
so I guess it's
20 years?
Or 23rd, the 23rd anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out in 1995.
Wow.
So... It's 20-year anniversary was 2015, so that's it's 2018.
Wow. So, yeah. Hey, shout out to Key Cool, man. More people need to like check him out. You know, he's a ambassador, West Coast ambassador, Asian MC. One of the first to do it, right?
I guess on wax per se.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just in general, in terms of. I mean, you know, as growing up, you know, it was a lot Asians, especially on the West Coast, have been involved in hip hop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more like more DJs, B-boys and graph writers, but there was really rare any MCs. But
yeah.
Coming up, yeah, Key was one of the very, very, very
first
few
one, that I heard of.
Yeah. I mean there's cats from the Bay Area. I mean, if you want
to Lyrics Born too, right?
Well, Lyrics Born, there was this group called KNT.
Okay, I don't
I mean, and then you know, you got like I mean, if you really wanted to say the real first Asian per se, or I used to say Pacific Islanders, is Booyah Tribe.
Oh yeah, they were hard, man. Yeah, they were on MTV Raps.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they're from they're Samoans, so
yeah.
They're from Carson. So you
they're
know,
from Carson.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shout out to the Booyah Tribe, man. I'm a big fan of. They were on wax and everything.
Yeah, rest in peace, the Godfather. Yeah, and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean,
I remember them, dude.
I mean,
yeah.
back in the days, though, you know, coming up, they were also known as poppers and stuff. So they were known as a group called the Blue City Crew. So if you ever watch this, documentary, you can watch on YouTube called Breaking and Entering. You'll see like Boogaloo Shrimp and Shabadoo, who's Turbo and Ozone from Breaking.
Damn, dude, so they were really dancing.
Oh yeah, they're one of the dopest, but they eventually, you know, became Booyah Tribe, you know, so.
Damn, yeah, so sick, that's
some history, yeah.
Wow, and then you mentioned, because I, you know, you gave me some vinyl, and I gave you my older album, and I told you I did production on this thing, and, and then you already knew facts about it, so what do you know about this particular machine?
I mean, it's because of... To my good friend Madlib,
shout out to Madlib.
He made, it's because of this machine that everybody started using it, because he actually he used this to make Mad Villain and Champion Sound with, you know, for, you know, Mad
this,
Villain with
this it. Little machine.
Yeah, yeah, especially he was using this in Brazil and stuff.
Dude,
like that.
This is all. This is like my baby. I've had this for like a long time.
It's the 303, right?
Yeah, so this is the 303.
So you really couldn't save anything on this.
Oh, no, there's a smart media.
Oh, because before, you know.
Yeah, this is the 202, so this is the precursor to that. This is Money Marks.
Well, the version I remember he couldn't save anything on that. So what he did was he basically just recorded on cassette. And then once it turns off, it's gone. That's it. So all the beats he did was on, like, basically on cassette.
Oh, that's then he even transferred, cooler.
Then he transfers everything to the Roland VS880, if you remember.
Yeah.
So he, you know.
It's hard to find these nowadays, man. Yeah. If you go online, nobody wants to get rid of these.
No.
These are like, this is a, I mean, I would give up an arm and a leg before no one's getting this. This is my baby. Yeah. You can only get them in Japan, I think, or now. I mean, it's hard.
I think so. Probably, you know, like,
then, dude, there's like these effects you could put on.
I mean, have you ever seen, like, Ross G or, you know, like, everyone from all the, like, the quote-unquote beat scene, you know, they all use that. But, you know, like, Ross G is a master of that shit, you know. It's like, but...
He's got the 303 or the 404?
He could probably got, like, they all started with the 303 and then, you
went
know...
Up. There's went a 404.
Up 404, 505, yeah. So 606, but that's the machine, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean... Like, I want to say Ross G and probably DiBiase, they all, like, for performance-wise, and they make beats with that, but...
Oh, the producer DiBiase?
Yeah.
They still mess with this?
Yeah, I mean, they go back to... They work using everything and shit.
Wow.
But Madlib, I know, was just the one who was just using that. Like, he was
I'm a big fan. Quasimodo and everything.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch any YouTube footage when he was in Brazil with Red Bull, he talks about that.
Just that.
There's pictures also, like, we saw Brazil in Time and stuff with shouts to B+.
Yeah.
They talk, you know, it was, you know, Madlib, Cut Chemist, J-Rock, Babu,
shout out to all them.
They were all, you know, they were digging.
That's your fam right there, right?
And that's where Madlib was using.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I that thing is very important to me. And speaking of Madlib, wasn't there another guy? Wasn't Doom using this too?
Doom used. I don't know if he was using it. I know he used the MP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was using
maybe the 60 or something.
No, 2000, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's go back to your man. Like, I discovered you in '95, just going to the record store and just buying that album. And then later, I bought Galleries, Visionaries Galleries.
Yeah.
Is that your first sophomore or first album?
Well, that's the Visionaries' first album.
Yeah, I used to listen to that a lot.
I would say that's the second album I produced, like the Keycon Rhythmatic.
Yeah,
Cognos, that's the first ever production, like, produced by Rhythmatic.
Yeah,
like,
you had officially. Skits in there too. You had a skit where you're like, "It's my glasses are foggy."
Oh yeah,
or something.
That was I did that with Razzcast.
Yeah. But I used to like lay down in. I lived in Arizona when I met Mestizo, and then we didn't have a lot. It was like right before Lyricist Lounge came into town.
Right.
But I'm like, there's not a lot of Asian guys to listen to groups. But I listened to that album like on repeat. I would just lay down and listen to your skits. I'd listen to
that's dope.
Yeah,
that's
man. So I was a fan, dude. Like, I want people to know, like, these guys, like, if you want to talk about West Coast history, you have to mention these guys, like, laid it down for, especially Asian cats, you know?
Technically we kind of did it, but at the same time, we wanted to, like, just, you know, show that we had skills. It's kind of like coming up. It was like on some 8 Mile shit, you know?
You really,
especially in LA, you gotta, you know, like during those times, I mean, again, Asians were in the West Coast, were always involved in hip hop, but it's like, there were pockets, you know, I grew up in Cerritos, so there was a big Filipino American community there, along with a lot of Asian. It was very diverse, but growing up, it was almost like a bubble. Each scene had a bubble and stuff.
Like, wait, South Bay, whatever, Long Beach. Yeah.
But if you really want, you know, and of course coming up, there was also an Asian scene, but if you really wanted to go see some dope hip hop shit, you got to go like to LA proper. You know, you got to go like Hollywood and, you know, like whatever, whatnot. And when you coming from the 562 area or 213 at the time, coming from like, even though we're like LA County, we were not, you know, like we were like outskirts coming in there. We're like, who are you guys? You know, like that.
Well, they were like that towards you?
Yeah, kind of. You know, of course they were, because you're like, who, you know, like we were new cats. But even when I was coming up, going to like clubs like United Nations, Funk Jungle, there were very few Asians. There were Asians, but there were very few, you know.
Wait, doing emceeing and producing and stuff?
DJing, they were doing it in pockets, but going to the actual, like, even like when you go to places like United Nations, where it was thrown by Africa Islam and Ice-T, you know, and Zulu Nation. Rhyme Syndicate, which is Ice-T's crew.
Divine Styler, too?
Divine Styler was part of that.
I'm a big fan of his.
Like anyone that was, especially during those times in, you know, late 80s, early 90s, there was a that was the thing where, you know, like that was the dope shit. You rarely get to see any, I mean, you see a few Asians, mostly it was like black Latinos, you know, some whites. And there's Asians, they're like very pockets. And then some from Japan.
Lighter shade of brown. I remember them.
They're from the Riverside area. You know, they were like,
but they had a single around MTV.
But it was more like,
just party, kind of party
radio
jams.
I mean, it's like, it's, you know, hip hop, there's like anything. There's, it's almost different styles and stuff like that. But what I was talking about, like United Nations and Funk Jungles and whatnot, is that Water the Bush, that was like, you would see like Def Jeff, Divine Styler, De La Soul, Grandmaster Caz, Big Daddy Kane,
the heavy hitters.
Then you see dancers like the Soul Brothers and Scheme Team and stuff like that.
They were at the events. Like
This is
in the 80s.
This is like late 80s, early 90s and stuff. Yeah. Like even before, but then even before then, you know, of course you got K Day, 1580 AM K Day, and that's what, you know, a lot of us that grew up here, regardless of what nationality, you can ask Cut Chemist. I know who. Yeah, he grew up listening to K Day. You know, and that's basically the first 24-hour rap station, quote unquote rap station, in the United States. And that's where you hear they were the first ones to play, of course, anything from New York, but then of course Egyptian Lover, Dr. Dre when he was a World Class Wrecking Crew.
That's a while ago.
Like King T. I mean,
I remember King T. He was hard, you
wouldn't be surprised when you listen to K Day. You would listen to not only Earth, Wind, and Fire, but you would also listen to hear Debbie Deb. You're listening to hear Mantronics, but you also listen to Run DMC, Egyptian Lover, Alexander O'Neal or Prince. You know, it was just
they mixed it up, but
that's where we grew up and stuff. It was like it was basically one of the black stations, but it was on the AM station.
Oh, that's sick.
So and of course there's if you've seen Straight Outta Compton, the NWA movie, there's a part where they go to World on Wheels. That's one of the clubs that you hear it on the radio.
Was that the roller derby?
I was too young to go there. Plus, it was too dangerous. It was World on Wheels, and there was a skate land. It's one. I forgot which one was either a Crip or Blood.
Oh, damn!
So it was for me coming from Cerritos. My parents, you know, wouldn't let me go like outside Cerritos. You know,
were there
like
Asian gangs out there where you're at?
Definitely. Like I said, like, well, Carson, you know, like Booyah Tribe, they were Bloods.
Yeah, they were Bloods.
There were Filipino gangs. There was like
Bahalana.
Yeah, Satanas. But I mean, of course, you know, and of course, this is the blacks and the Latino gangs and stuff like that. I mean, the 80s was crazy.
So when did you start getting into the DJing and turntablism and all that?
Basically, 80s. Well, coming up, you know, I was lucky to experience hip hop when it first came to LA or West Coast, like around 83 and stuff. So when I first started, I was most likely a popper and a graph artist. And then, then cats also were kind of deep. Back then, you did at least 2 to 3 out of the 4 elements right there. So I kind of was like, you know, I got, those are my 2 things, and I got DJing. So I was kind of doing 3, but DJing more was, as time goes on, DJing became more of my passion and stuff like that.
Where'd you dig and where'd you get all your records from back then?
At the time, locally wise, besides Tara Records, Music Plus, Warehouse.
Aaron's
was a little bit later.
Because
I was living in Cerritos. So high school wise, whatever, or swap meets, there was a store called Norwalk Record Sales. Mm-hmm. There was a store called Temple Records. It was, you know, mom and pop stores. And I remember whatchamacallit, Eazy-E dropping off records and stuff like that.
Dude.
You know, Eazy-E.
Rest in peace, man.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, it was from Compton. He had a house in Norwalk, which is like kind of like right next door to Cerritos. So when they were getting more bigger, he bought a house in Norwalk.
That's sick.
We used to hear about like Eazy-E walking around Cerritos Mall and shit like that.
Yeah, that's sick. He's like just slanging his 12-inch.
I mean, also because local swap meets and stuff. And then in Gardena, there's a swap meet called the Rhodium Swap Meet.
Okay.
So the Rhodium swap meet, shouts to Steve Yano, who's a Japanese American. Rest in peace.
Oh, rest in peace.
Yeah, so he's the guy that actually probably like had a record, you know, selling records in Rhodium swap meet, and basically was famous for selling all the Dr. Dre mixtapes.
Dang, dude. That must have been a great time.
Yeah,
huh?
So, I mean, a Japanese-American that was, like, you know, at the time, during those days, he was the only one, he was the guy that basically, like, Dre would get his records from. Like, he used to sell these records called Ultimate Breaks and Beats.
He'd get his drums from that?
All of Straight Outta Compton album was all from Ultimate Breaks and Beats. And Steve Yano was the only person in the West Coast that were selling those.
So they're very hard to attain.
Get at the time, it's like, you think there was like 23, 24 volumes. So that's like, imagine just to buy it, like one album was like, what, at least $15.99. So imagine. Yeah.
How many breaks were on there?
Think of it. Just so one album, probably at least six on one side. So 12 probably.
12 breaks. Yeah.
And then think about 24 volumes.
He would just loop it up, huh?
Yeah.
How did he beef up the sound so, like, Dre's got a distinct
production
style.
I mean, he definitely had an engineer named Donovan.
To pump up
to help him out.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you know, people have loop breaks, but to make it sound like beefy.
He was already a wizard.
Yeah.
I mean, Dre, a lot of people don't know, Dre was a dope DJ. So he was one of the cats I grew up listening to. Listening to him on K-Day or whatever, or whatever mixtapes or like that. So, yeah, man. So.
I ran into him. I used to work at Amoeba in 2003.
Oh, okay.
And I was a cashier and they put me in the warehouse.
When he came in. I heard about this when he came in and they closed down the store. And
I was there, dude. I just wanted to meet him, but I was so nervous. I'm just, you know. I think I gave him a demo, but I was so nervous. I gave him one of my CDs. He goes, "How do I reach you?" I go, "Oh, there's an email." Yeah, he was gonna peep it, but he was back there sitting at a wooden desk.
Yeah, he was digging.
He had his own control of whatever records, you know, people were just bringing him stuff.
Shouts to John Liu.
I work with John Liu. From Aaron's Records. John Liu.
Yeah, he's the hip hop. But he told us the story.
Got some knowledge.
He's the man.
He was very quiet, but I always liked him.
He's the man. He's the man.
So shout out to John Liu and Karen and Jimmy for hiring. Oh, thanks for hiring me. I got fired eventually. I was there and, working there, I mean, just going back to, this is interesting because nowadays DJing has changed so much. You know, the game's changed, and I like the fact that you have your own school as well, right?
Yes, it's called the Beat Junkie Institute of Sound. Mm-hmm. It's in the city of Glendale here in California. Mm-hmm. It's our own brick and mortar DJ school, so it's our headquarters and stuff. So We've been open for almost like a year now.
Dude, I got to dap you up for that. That's great. So, fantastic.
If you asked us 25 years ago, I mean, we opened up last year in honor of our 25th anniversary.
That's sick, man.
If you asked us 25 years ago, we started DJ school, we would like looked at you crazy. Because, you know, coming up
dude,
as
that
a hip,
makes so much sense, though.
Well,
right?
I mean, now it does, but back then, you know, you don't want to share your secrets.
Oh,
you know how it is. It's
yeah.
like, it's on, it's like,
but no,
some,
I didn't. I had homies that DJed, but they were weird with me even going around their stuff, and now I'm their friends with them.
Right, yeah. And, you know, like, it's kind of like on some, like, unless you crew, unless you're paying me, you don't, you don't show your stuff to the competition
that's
and stuff
like
that.
Yeah.
But,
that's like a Jedi secret.
Yeah,
or
like, you know,
yeah,
some,
yeah.
You know, some Shaolin.
Yeah,
Kung Fu
yeah,
shit,
that's
you
like,
look,
the,
yeah,
the technique.
Yeah, but now
to,
it's like, you know.
But you guys are openly sharing
yeah,
these
we,
techniques.
I mean, because in order our culture to survive, you have to share. As we got older, we realized we need to share this, you know. It's like.
It's knowledge, too,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You want to keep.
It's the culture and the knowledge.
Yeah.
So
tell me how if someone wants to attend your school, how do they like get involved with this?
Well, we have a website called BeatJunkieSound.com. You can always come to the school, too.
BeatJunkieSound.com.
Yeah.
Definitely go to that site. And how much is that? Let's say Bryce wanted to take a class. He knows nothing about turntablism.
Nothing.
Will you take him?
Oh, yeah. We teach anybody that's, whether it be your beginner or you're a veteran. Like, we basically, you know, we even have cats that come in just to train. We teach it more like martial arts, kind of.
Oh, like a dojo. You're in the dojo.
It's almost like, you know, like it's like we're building a community. We want you to, like, we won't promise you to get a gig, but we'll promise you to have a passion for it. And and you know, we want you to have fun, you know, love with it. And usually as you get older, you realize it's about passion. Mm-hmm. And if you have something that you love, then the rest will come. You just can't, you know, like, but that's what we think we want to do, is just to teach you the culture, and then and also at the same time, like, you know, give you something to, you know, that you, you know, might fall in love with. We look at this as a lifetime journey.
That's great. Yeah. Cause it's endless, right? Like the way,
even if you get to if you even get to be a black belt, you're still a student, you know?
Still.
Yeah. I'm still learning
still learning.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm still learning how to teach.
What
I'm learning. It's like,
this guy's one of the guys too.
Yeah, I'm still like,
okay, since Beat Junkies, right?
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about how that was formed, when it was formed, how did you gather all the members and all that? Because that's a monumental crew there you have, West Coast crew.
The crew was formed in 1992 by J-Rock.
Shout out to J-Rock.
Yeah, we call him the Funky President because literally he's like the James Brown on turntables. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much was the one that started the crew. So we,
okay. Who are the members then, the original members?
There's 13 of us. Originally,
Shortcut in there too.
Yeah, Shortcut's in it.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that Shortcut and D Styles were also members of the Invisible Scratch Pickles. Were junkies before they came Scratch Pickles. So they're like they have dual membership.
That's cool.
And stuff.
That's cool. You know, as well as you though too, because you've been in collaborative group. You've been because you're in Visionaries too, right?
Yeah, but that's a rap group.
Oh yeah,
a DJ,
right. I want to get to that in the future too. But like going back, like how'd you all meet? Just on some homie tip?
I mean, just basically. Well, some of us grew up together. Or at least around like in the area, like Cerritos, Long Beach, Orange County. During the almost like in the ending phase of the mobile DJ scene, whatever, like around 88, 89.
How do you define the mobile DJ, just for the viewers who are terminology?
It's almost kind of like the same thing, kind of like as like you're doing weddings, whatever, whatnot. Mm. But at the same time, we were also doing mobile, you know, like throwing your own parties and stuff like that. So cats were from different crews. I mean, if you heard like Hubert or Mixmaster Mike when they talk about their scene, it's almost the same thing. Cats were in different, they had their own mobile DJ crews, do the parties, have the thing. And at the time, and then eventually cats, you know, during that phase, like the late 80s and into the early 90s, everybody was phasing out DJing. It was more focusing on the MC, you know, the rappers and stuff. And at one point, people didn't want to be DJ. They wanted to produce or whatever. And we were only a few cats who were still DJing and stuff.
You guys
like
kept to it.
Yeah, so we kind of like, so all of us came from our prospective mobile DJ crews or whatnot. And, you know, we start seeing each other, you know, DJing parties together or whatever. It's just saying, and like, hey, you know, I met Jay at a record store and stuff like that with Curse, who's also an OG beat junkie. There's like, again, there's 13 of us. That's you know, but crazy. I mean, when it first started, it was like at least 13. There was like 13 of us.
That's similar to b-boying. Wasn't there a time in b-boying where it phased out?
Yeah, it kind of went underground.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing now. Like, it's funny. It's like you would like when like basically we were kind of like. When KD went off the air, the mix masters and stuff like that, they were like, we were kind of based upon them too, as to, you know, like, because the ones who were in the mix masters was Tony G, Julio G, Joe Cooley, DJ Aladdin, Battle Cat, Treyski, Ralph M from Funk Dubious.
I was just going to say Ralph M the Mexican.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Funk Dubious, man. And he came in Amoeba and I gave him respect. I go, hey man, you're Funk, because I love the beats on Funk Dubious. They were sick.
So you know, like they were like the ultimate. You know, they were like kind of like the ultimate DJ crew next to say Uncle Jam's Army.
You know,
but when they went, you know, they when Kelly went off the air, it was like, you know, there was a void. So we kind of somewhat patterned ourselves on, you know, the like all star crew and shit coming from like that. But
that's cool, man.
But ironically, you wouldn't know that at the same time in the Bay Area, you had the Scratch Pickles, which was Q-Bert, Mike,
Mixmaster Mike,
and then in New York. You had the Executioners or the X-Men. They were known as the X-Men.
The East Coast.
Right. So, you know.
Rock Radar.
Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Rob Swift. Mm-hmm. Mr. Sinister. You know, like.
Were you guys always cool with them, too? Like, just mutual respect?
Once the quote-unquote, like, around 91, 92, you know, battles went kind of underground.
There was
a New Mix Seminar, Superman Battles. You know, there were videotapes kind of running around, you know, like starting flying around. I mean, obviously, as a Filipino American, I mean, when Q-Bert won, you know, the USA and went to the world finals in 91, that just kind of opened up the doors and stuff.
You guys,
as a Filipino American growing
that's
up,
that's it. You guys, yeah, I mean,
we didn't have no heroes either. You had your parents. And you had Q-Bert.
This is before Pacquiao and stuff.
So, I mean, you know. And
Q-Bert was the guy.
Yeah, but I mean, I knew of Q because of Grapevine. We had same friends, whatever, whatnot, you know. I actually met him through because in 91, I was part of the Rocksteady Crew LA chapter.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
Oh, that's sick.
So they were part of they were Rocksteady DJ. So they were part of, you know, the Bay Area, the Frisco chapter.
Dude, that's crazy.
So, you know, in the LA chapter, I was in it. Rocker from Dilated People was in it. Easy Rock, Zulu Gremlin.
Shout out to Easy Rock. That guy's been around. He's still around, right?
Yeah.
You know, how'd you get down with those dudes?
Same thing. Hip hop scene, just kind of Yeah, you know.
Did they ask you to? Hey, we want you to.
Well, they were like, kind of put out. They put out the word and stuff. You know, a little bit like they were like.
That's that's a huge honor. Dude.
No. Yeah. Like, you know, so you know, it was crazy. You know, and that's how I met Q and Mike and Apollo, but of course, you know, it's also I met Crazy Legs, Doze, and stuff like that. You know, it was crazy. You know,
that's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, as a Filipino kid growing up, you know, getting to meet some of your heroes or people that it's crazy, you know.
Like, well, they're thinking that about you now.
I don't know.
People at your school, they're like, I can't believe this guy's teaching me, right? Wouldn't you? Like, if you did some kind of back history logging and like you would know that this guy is a foundation, big part of the foundation.
Well, I'm just lucky to be just grateful to be still able to do what I love to do. That's what I look at it.
That's sick. And then how did you get involved with the Visionaries? Because we had Tumex. Shout out to Alex. Tumex was on here. Yeah.
Well, it's crazy. So Junkies was in 92. Visionaries are pretty much kind of, 94, 95. Mm-hmm. I met Key around 93, 94. He was hosting, emceeing some of the some Asian parties too. Mm-hmm. He DJs too, kind of, but, you know, he was doing his own thing.
Cool.
I kind of heard his name here and there. Who's Key Cool? Like, you rarely hear any of you. There was few Asian.
This is before Jin.
Before Jin.
Before Mountain Brothers.
Before Mountain Brothers. Yeah. I mean, well, Mountain Brothers came maybe a year after, like when
94,
they put out their
maybe
90 no nine because we came our record came out in 95, so they probably maybe 96. Maybe.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm sure they were making their noise.
I like
in Philly.
Chops, dude. No, I like his production, dude.
Chops
his,
is dope.
He's sick, dude.
No, they're all dope. Like, yeah. They're all dope. I remember, you know, like, same thing.
Shout out to Philly, you know. I think he's, my homie Mestizo ran into him on the street.
Oh, where?
He's like, oh, my God. You know, he ran.
Yeah, I know he's doing, like, a lot. He's doing a lot of, like, he's doing a lot of production for, like, I know at the time, he was doing a lot of shit for Trap Cats, you know.
Yo,
like,
that's sick, yeah. His production's good, man.
Yeah. For real.
So, they're Chinese, right?
They're Chinese. Kiku's is Japanese American. I think I don't know if he's. I think he's Sansei. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think he's either second or third generation. I'm not exactly sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's, yeah. So he came up from the Gardena Torrance area, the South Bay area. So
your single is Can You Hear It? Can you hear it?
Well, so Can You Hear It was our side A single, but
okay, I remember that. They had a video, right?
Yeah. But we had the B side was really that got us our.
Was that the posse cut?
Yeah.
Oh, with Ganja K.
It was Razzcaz.
Razzcaz.
Voodoo. And Elemento. So that was the first time and the last time. Like, Raz was used to be in a crew called Western Hemisphere with Voodoo and Mean Green. And he just got signed. He was about to get signed to Priority. He was going through Patchwork. I knew Raz when he used to be known as Raisin, as a dancer. He was a dope ass dancer. And he was dancing with.
He's sick. Yeah, dude.
But so who introduced him to me was my man Kalani from the Scheme Team, Divine Style and the Scheme Team. So rest in peace to Kalani. Yeah. He's from Carson, and he would tell me, "Yo, man, you got to check out my boy Razzcaz." Little did I know that I was Raisin and stuff. So. I knew him as Raisin because he used to, like, again, he was a dope ass dancer. I think he used to dance.
Was he pop locking and stuff?
He was freestyle dancing.
Oh yeah, like house kind of. Yeah, but he was doing, with the fluorescent light. Yeah.
But he was doing crazy moves. Like, he would, like, literally run, jumped on his head and slide across the floor doing backflips and shit.
He was a b-boy then, no?
He was kind of like doing some b-boy moves and shit. Raz was dope. But then when
explain to him what freestyle dancing is, because I'm sure these kids don't know.
I mean, it's like some...
That was in the 90s, right?
Yeah. I mean, look up Soul Brothers, look up Scheme Team, look up Mop Tops. Mm-hmm. Mop Tops is more the East Coast, but like the big heroes during those times was the Soul Brothers, who used to dance for Def Jeff, and Scheme Team, who used to dance for Divine Styler.
That's what's up. Yeah.
So, but
that dude was tripped out. I love Divine Styler.
So that's how I knew about Raz, and then Kalani introduced me, and then that's when I also at the same time that's when I started meeting, you know, I finally met Key. Originally I was supposed to just produce for him. Mm-hmm. By that time also too, because like what a lot of people don't know, my introduction into the music industry was actually being the DJ for this group called Brotherhood Creed.
Well, that sounds familiar.
They had a song called Hell of a Hell, you know.
I don't know if I remember that one.
No, it's a big. It's one of those. It's one of those. It's the same sample that Lighter Shade of Brown used for Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, dun,
yeah. Dun, dun. Well, I mean, some people know. Yeah. So that's how I got into the music business. But when I got out of the group, I wanted to learn. You know, like it was a good experience for me, but I had a lot of bad memories because of what, you know, because of the music industry. You only see what you see on the videos and whatever until the behind the scenes shit. Yeah.
So, what was the biggest difference, like, when you're, like, really in it? Like?
I mean, of course, you see, like, you know, I mean, I was on Soul Train when I was on with, like, that. Wow. Like, but
that's crazy.
But then you just not, if you're not, you know, you just star-eye, you know, like, naive, and just, you think everything is right there and you don't know the business, you get taken advantage of, or cats can cut you off like that. And even doing music that you thought you're going to do, but you weren't going to do. So once I got out, I went back to really what I really wanted to do. So it became more and that's how I met Key. And then originally I was supposed to produce some tracks for him and stuff. I actually reconnected with them through an old school buddy of mine who was managing him at the time, and we just talked, and the next, you know what, dude, why don't we just be a group?
Yeah.
You know, because it's like...
Cosmonauts.
Yeah. It, well, you know, it came out... Originally, Cosmonauts was supposed to be a production group name for me. And, actually, my best friend, who was also part of Brotherhood of Creed, you know, when he left the group, we were supposed to just do beats. But I just said, you know, like, why don't we just call ourselves Cosmonauts? Because it's something...
I like that.
You know, it just...
That's what stood out to me. I'm like, what?
Because, you know, we're venturing out. Like,
yeah, I thought of you guys like astronauts. Yeah, like, maybe astronauts.
And then, you know, like I said, and it was cool because, like...
I loved it. Cosmonauts.
I mean, and then, you know, lucky to have, you know, got, was it when Raz started to make his buzz? I was able to get him on the album. Had Saphir on the album.
Was Saphir on there?
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites,
Saphir was on the song called Shapeshifters. This is just
shout out to Saphir.
This is when we were able to get him.
Before Boxcar Sessions?
This is right after Boxcar Sessions.
Because that album was one of my favorite albums ever.
This is also when him, Raz and Exhibit were starting to hang out also
because I met
Exhibit through Raz.
Wow, and shit, so, man, this is great. Let's just pause real quick. Do you guys know anything we're talking? These guys look so long. these guys have no idea. We're talking like jargon. Yeah. These guys have no idea what's going on.
I don't know if you know who Razzcaz is.
No, they don't know. Put it this way: the last 30 minutes, they're just like,
holy
shit! I have no idea what are they talking English.
So, do you know Exhibit though?
No, they have no
Exhibit is like, I hate to say it, everybody knows him from Pimp My Ride, but Exhibit is originally from he's part of the Liquid Crew. He was also down. He's down with Dre, Aftermath, and stuff like that. So he's the current host for the Pharmacy on Apple.
The Alcoholics was one of my favorite West Coast groups. I mean, I looked at them like the Far Side or any of those groups.
Got to see, you know, like.
You know those two, right? Yeah. Okay, thank God. He knew the last two.
Okay. Do you know who Dilated Peoples is? No.
All right, we'll get George back in here. This kid, I'm just kidding. We love you, Chris.
It's all good. Well, anyways, I've been probably dropping too much. Yeah. But so anyways, you're right. It was like we were the first on the web, especially. I mean, we kind of, same thing, Lyrics Born came out too at the same time. He's still killing it.
10 albums, dude.
Yeah, but when Lyrics Born, he was known as Asia Born. He was known as Asia Born, along with he was part with
Latif,
DJ
that
Shadow.
That album was sick too. The ones where they're both on the cover. Yeah, that album was sick.
So I mean, I knew about Asia, you know, of course, you know, Herb Magazine and all that stuff, and you know, we used to get all this stuff. Shouts to Jeff Chang.
Shout out to Jeff Chang.
Yeah, because he's the guy, you know, help. Put the, you know, Shadow, Black Alicious, and all those guys. He was part of their crew and stuff like that.
Is that Quantum?
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
going back to Herb, is that still around?
Nah.
Well, explain to the viewers what
Herb
URB. So explain to the viewers what that is.
Herb Magazine was like a local LA thing that became a big a magazine of all the of culture. Mm-hmm. Raymond Roker was the publisher, but you know, they did things on whatever was like house, rave, all the rave culture, but also did things on underground hip hop stuff. And then people like B Plus, a well-known photographer, Brian Cross, Brent Rollins, Jeff Chang, a couple of people like that who started writing all the articles for the hip hop on there. And eventually went on to do stuff to go to Rap Pages and The Source and you know, like that. You know, a lot of OG hip hop journalists did a lot of stuff on Herb Magazine. Jeff was one of the first people to do an interview on Key Clarinetmatic and stuff
like
that.
That's sick, man.
So
it was just refreshing to see that. I still remember the cover. It was black and white. It was a picture of you two.
Yes.
And I remember even the it was in the middle.
Key's tag.
Yeah, it was like a graffiti tag in the middle, and it was black, and it had a rectangle. You guys in the middle.
So it was like So I mean, we came out at a time where we were independent, you know, because you
who
know
put that what label put that
it
on?
Was Up Above Records.
Oh, Up Above, yeah, that's right.
And so basically, we came out at a time where it was just like, you know, if you want to do it our way, you had to put it out yourself and shit, you know. And luckily, I mean, like I said, the Posse Cut was called E equals MC5.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Wasn't that the last song on the album?
No.
It was later on the...
It was in between.
In between, okay.
But it was
yeah,
a B-side. It was the B-side of Can You Hear
It? Okay, yeah.
But that song was pretty much got our respect in the LA Underground.
Like that song?
That particular song, because we started playing... The Baker Boys played it. Oh, Mike Nardone. Like a... you know, like all the college radios and the mixed hip hop shows in LA at the time were playing it.
So
of course, if you watch the video, mm-hmm. like on Can You Hear It, you'll see cats like well respected West Coast MCs like Sophia was in it, Raz Kaz was in it,
yeah.
Born of Law, Mean Green. I want to say AC Alone.
Is it on the internet where people?
So
if you type in Kiku and Redmatic, can you hear it?
Yeah.
On YouTube.
YouTube.
And then definitely check out that video and you'll know what he's talking about there. Yeah.
It's a little bit more jazzy, whereas mm-hmm. the B-side was more rough and rugged.
Yeah. And then you did all the production for the whole album?
No. Can You Hear It? I didn't do that.
Okay.
But I did at least about 70 to 80% of the album, you know.
What did you produce on back then?
SB 1200.
Oh, you had the SB-12.
Yeah, that is one of the. It's like,
whoa, you had. Oh okay,
man, that cost me. That cost
yeah,
me.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. How'd you get the when did you get it? When?
So the EMU SB-1200 mm-hmm, machine, mm-hmm. Drum machine sampler.
Explain to the viewers what that is.
That machine is probably is the machine that pretty much all the classic hip hop shit has been produced by, everyone from Dr. Dre to DJ Muggs, we're using the first three Cypress Hill albums, to Diamond D, to Lord Finesse.
Mark's got one too. Shout out to Money's got
Pete Rock.
Mm-hmm. Pete Rock is still smooth.
What do you call it?
Large Professor?
Large Professor, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Marley Mall. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Maybe Prince Paul?
Prince Paul had the one.
Yeah, he probably had one. Shout out to Prince Paul. We love Prince Paul.
Yes, I love the show.
Yeah, we love Prince Paul.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Paul.
Yeah.
Buff. Guy. Yeah.
We love Prince Paul.
So, when they stopped making it, it came back out. The original version is like gray. Before that was the SB-12, and it only had 5 seconds, and they didn't have even a hard drive. You had to buy a separate hard drive, and it was those big floppy disks, computer floppy disks.
How do you even make a beat with that limited time, dude?
So the SB-1200 is only 10 second sampling time, but then a small floppy disk. So you remember those big SB-12 had the big Commodore floppy disks, those big ones when computers first came out.
Yeah, that's way back.
Yeah, now.
The
smaller ones.
Yeah, these
ones. Do you have it?
No, well, they kind of look like.
Well,
they,
yeah, kind of.
Really,
well, anyways, they're 2.5, yeah. whatever. So, only had 10 second sampling time. So, mm-hmm. You really had to be really creative with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Madlib. Again, shout out to Madlib.
Yeah.
He used the SB-1200 and did the Loop Pack album with the SB-1200.
He did.
Yeah.
Didn't he produce for the Alcoholics too?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I could have sworn he did. He was on that first joint.
He was on his first album.
Coast to Coast.
Was he on Coast
to
Coast?
He was on Coast
to Coast. Okay. He did WLIX.
Yeah, that was a great. Yeah.
I want to say he did Mary Jane mm-hmm. on the first album. So,
So let's go back. That's interesting to me because what do you say now? Because nowadays there's computer programs where you have all the time in the world. To sample.
Yeah.
So would you say that forced you to be more creative?
Oh, hell yeah.
You're like, okay, I have literally a second to loop this perfectly.
Basically, you had your turntable.
With the break.
You put in a plus 8, mm-hmm. the pitch control at plus 8 mm-hmm. and 45. Mm-hmm. Sample it, and then you had to detune it to slow it down. And then since it's a 12-bit sound, you got that crunchy thing.
Yeah,
and then you had to chop it up and whatever you can. And so it's like you only had a certain amount of time to get more time. You speed it up and then slow it down.
So you had to speed up the break too?
Yeah, sometimes you have to even turn off the turntable and spin it real fast to get it written, and then sample it, come and then slow it down, truncate it, and all that shit. So yeah, but basically
it's a sampler, right? The SB-12 is a sampler, drum machine.
Drum machine sampler.
It's sequence.
There's a sequencer on there.
But there's a loop. Like these things.
You got
a loop.
It loops. You had to loop it yourself because the sequence.
I'm sorry. Look at their face.
I'm sorry.
Keep going, though.
No.
So if you're using, say...
I love it.
Do you know how to use Pro Tools?
Uh, I barely started with that.
He's more Adobe Premiere.
Final cut?
Yeah. Well, that's the day we saw.
Okay, so final cut. So, you know, let's say you can just like, if you copy, paste, copy, it's like, and for us, it was more of a sequencer. So you had, so it's like, it's a metronome going, you tap it out, say it's 89 BPM. It'll go for four bar measures and you, whatever you tap it out, it comes back again. You add.
So it's layering it.
But then sometimes you tap it out. If you chop up the drums, you can kick and snare, you can program the beat itself. Plus on top of the loop, you make stuff like that.
Now, do other producers like today that still do it that way?
I mean, obviously, I noticed that a lot of younger kids are trying to go back into more of the, you know, try the to gear. Learn about the analog gear.
Because
a lot of us that started with analog or the quote unquote analog gear or like the drum machines, hardware, we still apply it to using softwares, but we because of what we had to go through, we now know what we use on a software.
Right.
Of course, being hard, you know, like at the time being hardcore, like you can't use a computer like that.
Yeah.
Now it's like, dude, it doesn't matter what you use. It's really what's here and what if it sounds dope.
Right. So like you, I take it you still produce as well as the turntable.
Yes, sir.
What nowadays? What are you using? Are you doing a bit of both?
In terms of,
as far as your gear, like what you're using.
Well, like I mean, well, my current production is I use a propeller head Reason software. I need to get into Ableton.
Yeah, everyone's on Ableton.
I know,
yeah?
Ableton. Ableton is, you know, there's no right or wrong way to use it, so it gets overwhelming. But I just really need it. Like, but Reason's been, you know, what I've been using.
There ain't nothing wrong with that. I mean, it does it.
But I go back to using the SP-1200 and MPC 2000 just to like last year. I went back to use the SP-1200 for the first time like in 10 years or so.
Dang, it was dusty, huh?
No, I still keep it clean.
But it was just to actually use it.
It really took me a hard time. How did I use 10 seconds? It took me a hot minute to get really used to it.
To go back.
Because, you know, when you have so much at your disposal, you're spoiled.
Yeah.
I had to be like, okay, I really have to be more picky and I had to go back to using your imagination and really it forced me to really like to be more creative. You have to be more creative, you know, and stuff. Not saying you don't have, like, of course, the more stuff you have, you can do a lot of stuff, but it's just to have less makes you be more, it forces you to be more creative. And then sometimes the best shit comes out because you only have this much.
I love that, man. I mean, this guy, it's like talking to an encyclopedia. I would like to take this time, since these guys don't know what the hell's going on. I'm just curious, what questions would you ask Rhett? Come, because they don't know about the stuff we've been literally talking alien language.
Oh, you said you were a graphic design before.
Oh, well, okay, well I was a graph artist.
Graffiti.
Yeah,
graffiti.
I did try to go to school to try to be a graphic artist. I got an associate's degree, but like, you know.
There you go, Steve.
Okay, I'm just having fun with you, man.
Yeah.
I wanted to add you guys.
Yeah, I was.
Chris, you always have good questions too.
I was learning before. You know, like while I was still going to school, I did learn how to use Photoshop and I was getting used to Illustrator. But then after that, I was like.
Yeah.
You know.
Can you use that in your albums for art cover and stuff?
You know what? Obviously, all my friends who do that, they still does it. But you know, like they, just, you know, but I kind of like, oh, I'll have an idea. I'll still tag. I'll do pieces here and there. But I haven't really drawn as much as like really gone into it. Just was like, you know, like at the time it was like when I was going to school for it. My first love was actually drawing.
Mm-hmm.
But I got burnt down in it because it was not start. You know, when you started going to school and it was just like
you're doing art classes.
You're trying to do your best work. You put it up there and they critique it and it's like, no, that's not what I want. And it's like at the time, you know how back then it was so rigid.
Compared to now,
it's like, and it wasn't fulfilling me. You know, like it didn't. It wasn't fun anymore. Whereas I was still DJing too, and that was like my outlet. You know, so. I was having more fun with that. Even my parents were like thinking.
Yeah. Well, how do you keep it down at night? Will you just do it through the headphones?
When I was in high school, man, I used to practice, and they were like,
"How many hours would you practice like on a typical night?"
Man, a good 4 to 6 hours.
Chris, you got a question for Rhett?
Yeah, I got a question. What was the last beat you produced using the old school gear?
It was like last year. I did it. It's on my Bandcamp page. Mm-hmm. It's called.
You got a Bandcamp?
Yes.
Okay, what's your Bandcamp? Let's get that out too.
Rhettmatic, RHETTMATIC .bandcamp.com.
That's what's up. Hey, dude, let's say a kid like studies you and like, oh, I like what he did. I like his style. Like, do you slang beats or like, if someone wants to work with you, like how do they?
I got to a point where like, you know, like before, of course, back then, you know, like, yeah, try to shop my beats.
But nowadays they can just hit you directly, dude.
Yeah,
you know,
but
what I mean?
I only work with people that I can either vibe with. I don't, mm-hmm. Or you know, like I'm fans of. I don't really. I'm not looking to shop my beats anymore. If the people want to buy my beats, it's
but
like,
what if they seek, you're sought after? Like if they see this episode, they're like, we really like his stuff, man.
But it goes back to also not to sound, I don't want to say snobbish or anything like that. I prefer to work with people that I know I have or I'm a fan of, or I at least can vibe with, because it got to a point now. It's like, you know, like, you know, you don't want your name associated with, you know, certain things just because.
You respect that, Chris? Yeah. I respect that, man. You know? Yeah, because that's
just, like, I learned it the hard way. You know, mm-hmm. You can work with anybody, but then sometimes it's like, are you co-signing that person? You know, like that, even though are you doing it because they're giving you money, or do you like the
project?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I got to a point now, is I think everybody in this room if you're an artist, you really just want to work with people that you feel, you know,
compatible with, like, you know, it makes sense.
It doesn't matter. I, at this particular point, even if they were, you know, offering me a lot of money, I won't do it unless it's like,
you believe in the project.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to endorse something that I don't believe in.
Right.
I think everybody will agree with that.
Yeah, no. I get it. Totally get it.
And no disrespect, because, and I know, you know, and I'm honored if people want my, you know, but I got to a point where it's just like, I like to work who I like to work with. That's
it. Yeah, right. You know. Are there musicians or artists that you haven't worked with yet that you would like to work with? Like, what are some of the future projects you would like to, like, collab?
Future or, yeah, collab, or just, people I've dreamed
of? Yeah, just dream collaboration, stuff that, like...
I mean, of course, in terms of MCing, for rappers or MCs or like that, I mean, everyone from Redman to Rakim, Nas, Kendrick Lamar. You know, it's funny. I've never done anything with Planet Asia, and we always talked about it and stuff like that. But just, you know, I'm not like Madlib or Ono, who makes 30 beats a day.
They do that?
Oh, yeah, that's like nothing to them. They make 30 beats a day, for real. They make albums just for them, just to make albums for them, just to listen to their sales. They don't like Quasi. That's how the Quasimodo album was.
That's mind blowing.
I don't know if you know about the story about the Quasimodo
Please
album.
Please explain that. I mean, I'm sure the viewers, because I'm sure there's Quasimodo fans out there.
So Madlib doesn't like his voice. So he made the Quasimodo album while on shrooms. He speeded on his 4-track, you know, to speed up his voice because he hates his voice. And he makes albums for just him to listen to. That's it, right?
Yeah, sure. Does he trip out a lot when he does this thing?
I mean, he's just a genius in many ways.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And so Peanut Butter Wolf heard it just on a spare. What is this?
Oh, this is some shit I just fuck around
with. Yeah, just a side project.
And Wolf is the type of person, if he likes it, he'll put it out. So
he probably saw the brilliance in it or something.
Yeah, and he said, you put it out. Next you know, boom.
What is the character like? Because there's a cartoon character.
Well, Jeff Jank made the character.
He created it?
Jeff Jank is the art director of Stone's Throw.
Yeah.
And stuff, and did a lot of, you know. So he kind of like... It was like the brainchild of him, you know, like of him and Madlib. He would listen. At one point, Madlib, Jeff Jenk, and Peanut Butter Wolf, you still all live together and stuff like that. So
how do you sit there? I mean, he must just That's he must be so dedicated to making music that he that's all he does.
That's honestly all he does. I mean,
or a record going to the record shop coming back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't seen Otis in a long time, but that's you know. That's what he does, really.
Yeah, I saw his Red Bull Academy interview.
That's all he does.
Yeah, it was like intriguing to say the least.
I mean,
you guys, Mad Lib fans?
Cricket.
What's going
Cricket.
On?
But okay, so anyway.
Anyways.
But now I'm a fan, and I just love hearing those stories because for producers out there, they're probably like, maybe they're like, oh, that's what it might take for me to get that good.
I mean, I guess in anything, yeah, like if you whatever yeah. you're like you're a skater, mm-hmm. you're
you have
martial
to put
artist,
in the hours,
you,
huh?
You definitely have to put in hours.
Let's go back to let's relate that to turntable, like
when I was
how many hours would it take to get to how good you are?
I don't know. I would do it for 4 to 6 hours, like after homework, even to a point where my parents just like go to sleep. Are you going to DJ and scratch all day? You better go. Hey, yeah. Is that you going to be your daytime job? You better not. You better go to school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they were on. When did they start supporting it?
Oh. Honestly, maybe I would say 1999, 2000 when I finally invited him to my first show, which was probably the best thing I did, was like, because even then when I was in the, like, I God bless my dad who passed away in 2009.
Rest in peace, man. Yeah, rest
I
in
remember
peace.
When I told him, like, look, I want to try this out, I need to do this, you know, like I want, you know, I'd rather have your blessings, mm-hmm. but if not, I'm going to do it, you know? And luckily he says, you know, as a man, I understand. So he said, I'll talk. My mom still wants me to go back to college.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like whatever.
Well, my girl, she's Pinoy too.
Yeah,
and,
so you know.
They're really. Oh, yeah.
Well, Asian parents in general.
Oh my God. It's a, no, nurse. You're going to be
you're
a nurse.
You're going to be a doctor.
Yeah,
you're
doctor.
Going to be
yeah,
an engineer.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be an architect or a nurse.
It's not even for the kids. It's for them to feel good about.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like messed up.
Yeah, it's but no. Well, I think when it was the Word of Mouth tour, it was Jurassic 5, Dilated Peoples, Beat Junkies, MC Supernatural, and Brickestra, and it was at the House of Blues here on Sunset Boulevard. You know.
Yeah, right there, but near the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Rest in peace there.
Yeah,
it's no longer there, but
so I finally said, you know what.
It's a good venue, man.
I invited my parents and my uncle and aunt to go check out the show. And, you know, just like, you know what? You guys, like...
You got them tickets?
I got them tickets, you know, the VIP. And, like, this is what... You want to see what I really do? This is what I do.
Yes.
They didn't understand it. But then all of a sudden, they're all tripping out. Like, oh, there goes Rhythmatic's parents or something like that. And then it's funny,
the audience members were
saying that? Well, they kind of figured it out who, like,
yeah,
they
yeah,
were
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, like, my parents, they're like... People that, you know, like, you know, acquaintances or friends of theirs, sometimes even people that they don't even talk to now come up to them and says, hey, you know, they're like, why are they talking to us? And then they're like, our son wants to meet your son.
Oh,
yeah,
that's when they knew.
They started kind of knowing things.
Yeah.
And at the time, I really didn't, you know, unless you knew, I never really said anything.
I don't know you that well. You seem like a humble dude.
I really would never want to talk about it. Unless you were in the scene. I wouldn't, like, if a Joe Schmo didn't know who I was, and that's cool. Unless they know who I, you know, then okay. But I kind of like it like that, where I can, you know, like, they know my work. Like a graffiti artist,
yeah.
They see my work, but they don't know who the person is.
You started getting coverage though too. Now I remember you were like getting on magazines. Weren't you getting in Herb too?
Yeah. It was cool. You know, like, of course I wanted to represent. You know, I wanted to represent me as a Filipino American, but I wanted to also represent me as a hip hop artist, like mm-hmm. a cat that was like, I don't want to be known as like an Asian hip hop artist. I want to be known as a hip hop artist that happens to be Asian.
Yeah. You're a musician though, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what you do with the trade, you're a musician, dude.
Right. But you know, at the time, you know, they had, you know, there was a Latino rapper. There was a this and
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
I,
yeah.
I didn't want that, you know, coming up, I didn't want to be known as like, you know, he's an Asian American and be pigeonholed.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be known as like, yo, he's a dope DJ. He's a dope producer that just happens to be Filipino. That's the thing, you know. I wanted to break that stereotype and stuff, you know, like, because usually there were cats coming up, you know, especially in the Filipino culture. Our cultures are very, you know, a lot of very talented people, but at the time, you know, we were also known as being imitators. We can imitate anybody, but there was no originators. And you know, in hip hop, you have to be original.
Yeah.
So I wanted to come out there. Like, you go, when I would go to like Filipino American talent shows, and they would cover a lot of R&B or rap songs or dance and stuff, but
there's amazing singers too.
Yeah, but they didn't. But they emulate,
right?
There was no one that was original.
Original.
I wanted, at least for me, I wanted to go out there and represent, like, yo,
originality.
Like, you already know that. Well, he's not. You know, I'm not black and Latino. He's some type of Asian. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know what is he. You know, is he Samoan or is he whatever? Like, I want, you know, I wanted to show, like, he's, you know, like, I wanted to show that I got skills and being and especially coming in the hip hop scene during in those days in L.A. You know, of course, they'll look at you kind of like, who, you know, of course, they'll go like, who's this Chinese guy or whatever, whatever.
Oh, yeah, you didn't even talk about that. There was racism.
But
back
in some ways, right? But then when you show you got the skills and you had the heart and stuff, they respect you.
Yeah.
And the irony of it is, like, I'm sure in the Asian community at the time, they would kind of look at you like, you know, at one point they were used to, like, ooh, you trying to be, want to be black? You're a fligger? You know, like that?
That ain't the case, though.
It's
an art form, too.
But, you know, it's, of course, as Asian Americans growing up in L.A., and especially, you know, we gravitated towards the, you know, hip-hop because, you know, it was something different. We relate to it in many ways, you know, and I have to say hip hop made me appreciate my own culture.
Right.
You know, of course, you get with Public Enemy, you know, with Kid Frost with La Raza, you know, talk about your own, you know, like, well, why, you know, like, why should I be not proud of what I do? And then, like someone, like, say, shouts to Bamboo, that's my pata, you know, like him representing, you know, the Filipinos, you know, like, he's a dope MC.
You know,
and he's very, very active also with the Filipino community and stuff like that. So, anyways.
There's a bunch of Filipino MCs now, like, right? Like,
I mean, same thing, just Asian in general, you know. Like, again, going back to Kiku, one of the first, you know, Japanese American. If you listen to our album, he talks about, he did a song called Reconcentrated, and he talks about the concentration camps. Japanese internment camps. Mm-hmm. His parents,
gone through that. That's so cool, man.
And ironically, in some of the Asian American studies in UCLA, it was used in UCLA.
That's cool, man. So is he still doing music?
Yeah. You know, he's just like may as well let out the cat out of the bag, but we are working on a new Visionaries album.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Can we talk about it a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, so new Visionaries album coming soon. Elemento.
Elemento, 2Mex.
Danu.
Danu, Lord Zen. Kiko and myself.
Yep.
We're like kind of like the United Benetton.
I've always been a fan, dude. I've always been a fan.
Multicultural
of you
crew. But you know, same thing. We represent LA. Yeah. Same, you know, like, just.
So are you guys recording right now?
Yeah, we do. I mean, just. It's been almost 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
Almost 10 years, at least, like, we have, since we had a new album. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's been doing their own thing. Life happens too, also.
Yeah.
You know, some have solo albums.
I can't wait to hear that.
With this particular album or EP, I don't know. It could be EP, it could be album. I'm actually this time doing all the production on this one. Usually it's usually Kiku and myself, and then we get J-Rock and Babu.
Cool,
but this
one,
just to get back into it. Just, you know, I you know,
how you prepping your, how you prepping,
I don't know,
yourself.
I look at it, I told the guys is, like, just don't overthink it.
Let me just make the beats, man. Had fun back in the day, yeah, you know, just the skits and everything.
I mean, we still got, you know, of course, but you know a lot of our fans, God bless you guys, are still asking for albums. So I'm not trying to overthink. I just want to have fun.
Yeah.
And then just put it out and then see what happens.
Yeah,
don't
man.
Don't like, we got to go on tour. No, there's just.
Yeah, just put it out.
Just put it out.
Yeah. So are you so are you producing? Are you staying up now and like are you working on that?
I mean,
nightly?
I got some like
you got because you're at the school too.
I got the school.
Yeah,
we just launched our DJ online school, beatjunkies.tv. Mm-hmm. We have a digital record pool, beatjunkies.com, mm-hmm. and we also have Beat Junkie Radio, which is on Dash Radio. Mm-hmm. So. Like you said, I'm in a couple of other groups. I'm in Cypress Junkies with Eric Bobo from Cypress Hill. It's a DJ percussion
crew. That's sick. I'm a Cypress Hill fan myself. Yeah. Yep.
Cypress Hill album's about to drop.
Oh yeah. Shout out to Muggs too.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I'm also in a crew called Dirty Disco Squares with Prince Paul and Mr. Len.
Oh, from Company Flow.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that too.
Yeah. So yeah. Mr. Len now DJs for Everlast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have a project with Divine Styler, Everlast?
Yeah, well, that's the new album's about to drop. Well, Everlast, Sick, like, they're on, Everlast, Sick Jackin, and Divine Styler. They're called War Machine.
War Machine, that's it. Yeah, that's right. I saw that on the internet, and I'm like, oh, that's
but
sick.
Everlast is dropping a new album called
White. I'm happy. His country stuff, too, man.
It was called Whitey's Ford's.
Yeah, Whitey Ford's,
no,
yeah.
No, it's called the Whitey's. Blues. The new album is called Whitey's Ford's House of Pain. It's a combination of both House of Pain Stees and Whitey Ford shit.
Wow. Dude.
Everlast, I mean, Evidence, Producer Cut, Divine Styler, I know, of course, there's some Whitey Ford stuff. But
that's cool, man. Yeah. It makes me happy that you guys are still doing your thing, man, you know?
So, yeah, cats from our era are still doing it. It's just, you know, like maybe not as big as like in the 90s, but...
Yeah.
You know, but...
Who are some of the artists, some of these up-and-coming youngsters? Do you even listen to... New stuff that's going on?
Well, it depends on it, you know, like if... You know, I don't disrespect all the younger cats. I mean, I understand it, and there's a time and place for it. You know, of course, there's, you know, like, whether it be Migos. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not mad at the Drake album, you know. Of course, Premier produced cuts on it, so that's why, I like it. Of course, you're talking about the new cats. You, of course, Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you got, like, cats like Royce da 5'9" still doing it. In terms of just producers wise, I mean, anyone from, man, there's so many cats. Nico Beats, Drugs, man, Anderson .Paak. I mean,
just goes on and on.
Goes on. I mean, Sango, K Tronada, Derringer, who's down with Griselda. Mm. I mean, you know, the whole Griselda crew with, you know, West Side Gun. I mean, there's also these cats called Dirty Diggs. Mm-hmm. Man, there's so many dope. Here's the craziest thing I would say about today compared to last year.
Yeah,
back then, you would have to really dig for it because there wasn't shit to look. It was hard to find shit. Mm-hmm. Now, there's so much shit. You have to still dig for it and find what the shit you have to look for that you like.
Right.
Cats complain is hip hop is dead. It's not. The people that said hip hop is dead is my generation. Most of them are married and got kids and they have responsibilities and they don't have time to really literally dig.
Right. You know? Right. For the new stuff.
But if you really, like I always say, if you really love the shit, you look out, especially with now the internet. Mm-hmm. There should be no excuse.
You can just digital, just upload it.
You just
boom.
Gotta find. You just have to dig for it. You gotta find whatever. One, you know, same thing. Look, once you find something, look, start researching and stuff.
What are some these upcoming DJs as well? Because I know that I didn't really tap into that, but there's vast differences nowadays. These people are they're not even bringing turntables anymore. They could just bring their iPod or their laptop.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, if you're looking at it in terms of clubs, I mean, you're going to bottle service clubs. That's why, you know, that's one thing you're going to hear all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's, you know, like LA has been really, we've been really, for the last 10, 15 years, the music scene here in LA is incredible. Like there's so much stuff going on. It's like you can hear, like on the weekdays, you go, you want to hear, well, unfortunately, Low End Theory, like last Wednesday was the last.
It's done, right?
It's been done in 12 years. You know, that's a place to go where, all, you know, to hear the cutting edge stuff. But for reggae, there's the Dub Club. During the summers, there's Do Over. On Fridays, there's Do It with DJ Expo over at the Shortstop. You would hear once in a while, there's some one-offs, like Selection, shouts to Selection. They'd be throwing some, you know, like, they got their own movement. That's another movement itself. There's so much shit going on that, you know, for anybody, for everybody, anybody that really wants to hear whatever you want to get into. In terms of the battles and turntable scenes, it's coming back, especially with the what they call the portable scene, the portable turntables. Everybody's cutting on those.
Wow!
Yeah, so it's like a resurgence.
There's a scene with that.
Yeah, you know those Newmark portable turntables.
Yeah.
Cats are cutting
they used to sell those at like turntable.
Now it's
lab,
like no, then cats are like modifying it, and you can have faders on it and cutting it up. Yeah.
Oh man, that's so cool.
You got, I mean, battles and stuff. I mean, look, the 2018 world champion is a 13-year-old kid named DJ Reyna from Japan, kicking what? Ass.
13 years old.
And him and his another cat too, also K Swiss from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. 13 years old.
Super beast DJs kicking ass.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Hey, DJs is you know, depending on where you're looking at. DJs are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If someone wants to start DJing, like, what are some tips you could give them? Like, just to.
Well, it's expensive hobby, that's for sure. I would suggest to learn on turntables before you go on CDJs or controllers. I get it because it's expensive and stuff, but I guarantee you, if you learn on turntables, especially with now Serato. Still, you can use like you're almost using wax and learn the basics. It's like anything, like you learn how to skate, learn how to fight, whatever.
Yeah.
Learn how to draw. You got to learn the foundations and then you got to put in work and then go from there. That's
cool,
all I said.
Man. How we doing on time?
We're a little bit over an hour.
We're over an hour, dude.
Sorry.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good.
Sorry.
No. To end it, I wanted to, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate that.
No, thank you.
Can we give some plugs and your social media,
sure,
upcoming events, if you wanted to say all that now, too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So y'all can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Rhetmatic, RHETTMATIC. That's RHETTMATIC. That's both Twitter and Instagram. Rhetmatic.bandcamp.com. That's where you can hear some music. I have an album I did with Aloe Black that came out, and originally we did in 2009, but I put it out like 3 years ago.
Cool, man. Is that on
it's
your Bandcamp?
Bandcamp page, you know. Of course, beatjunkies.com, beatjunkiesound.com, beatjunkies.tv.
And then say, shout the school again.
The school, yeah. Beat Junkie Institute of Sound. Mm-hmm. That's the school. That's in the city of Glendale. Mm-hmm.
How much to take a basic class?
I can't tell you that.
Oh, okay.
You got to call.
Okay.
But also follow the Beat Junkies. Twitter is Beat Junkies.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram is The Beat Junkies. And then from there, you can go link to our other social medias like there, like for the Beat Junkie School and Beat Junkie Radio, Beat Junkies TV and stuff. So, we're
handles
trying,
there.
We're trying to take over the world.
That's cool, man. That's cool. And then when should they expect the Visionaries album to be completed?
I hope I can finish it before we all can finish it before this year is over. I know, but I don't want to rush it because if you rush it, sometimes it's like
right.
Just want to just have fun.
There you go, man. Hey, yeah. Thanks for coming by. I have to do a couple shout outs myself.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad. I think I'll talk to you after as far as who you think would be a good guest on here. You know, because I want to educate people on like the past as well as the present with artists, right? And I have to give a shout out to the Patreons. There's no new one. I did them for the Wee Man one. But if you want to join the Patreon for this show, go to patreon.com/StevieWeeby. You could also check out some music I'm doing. I'm working on a new project, Collage of the Mirage, at Stevie Weeby. It'll be at Stevie Weeby Bandcamp. I like Bandcamp, actually.
Yeah, Bandcamp's
the
shit.
It's cool. Because we'll talk later, but I'm not going to put it on iTunes for this one. Just because I don't.
Bandcamp.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go Bandcamp. Yeah, I'm gonna go all Bandcamp. If you want to follow the Stevie Weeby Show, go to Instagram/QUANGOU. And let me see. Did I... Yeah, and then make sure to get my homie Mestizo's new album, Mestizo, with the Heavy 12's Big Bad Death at fake4.bandcamp.com, and definitely support the homie.
Yeah, shout out to Mestizo.
Yeah, shout out to Mestizo, and definitely get that album. Thanks again, brother. Appreciate it. No Little Ray this week. It was last week, but it'll be next week. I'm working on my thing, so. Yeah. Okay, let me just explain. People have been asked about the Little Ray puppet show. Since I'm working on my own solo project, most of my energy and time is going into this project, so I we're doing Little Ray every other week, right, Bryce? And then Bryce is back. Okay,
I'm back, guys.
Yeah, Bryce is back, and dude, thanks again, man.
Thank you.
I'm very happy with this episode, and it should be out in 2 weeks.
Word up.
Okay.